What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Home and Away here on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed. I'm Stephen Gillespie, but you know that because you heard me yesterday on Draft Deeper with co-host Maxwell Baumbach. But today, man, I got such a fun show lined up. This is a draft podcast, so you know we're going to talk draft. But I'm kind of labeling this one like, don't forget where you come from. Because we're going to be talking about basketball, which my guest and I have been fans of basketball our whole lives. We're going to be talking WrestleMania, which my guest and I have been wrestling fans our whole life. And my guest today gave me the pathway to be where I am now. So he's been gracious enough to host myself and a lot of my other No Ceiling brothers here on the network. And it's only right that we return the favor. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Mr. Chris LeBron. Chris, what's up, my man?
Hey, man, that's a hell of an intro. Hell of an intro. I appreciate that, bro. You know, when you came on my show, I mentioned like how we got started. Started with an email. An email and a reply. And it was to me, it's always cool when someone asks me to come on their show. And we've taken off ever since that show. Like, I hopped on your show and it's like, it was like instant like chemistry. And you're like, like he knows what he's talking about. I like the way you formatted the show. And then we've made this, it's 3+ years or whatever it's been since we've, you know, talked to each other about, you know, everything, you know, so it's been a fun ride and to see your success, bro. You know, I'm always happy to see your grind and all that. So, you know, I'm ready, Brad. I appreciate you for having me on.
Oh yeah. So real quick, man, like I know who you are. Everyone at No Ceilings know who you are. But we've had some developments on the network for a little while now. And so there might be some ears that may not know Chris LeBron and what you do, man. So I want to give you the opportunity to kind of share your network, kind of your history and what you got going on, man. Let the people know in the beginning of this episode where they can find you and your work.
Yeah, so you could follow me like Off the Ball Pod. It's where I'm most active. I'm talking every type of basketball. You name it, I'm talking it. You know, it's crazy how like I even got started. Like,
yeah,
it was. I remember summer 19 when the Knicks just Knicks didn't have a great offseason, to say the least. At the moment,
shocker.
Yeah, shocker. You know, at that point we're used to that, and it was one of the most. It was a very low point as a fan of the team, and there's been a lot of low points, but that was probably the lowest. And I just started doing the podcast and just started and all that, and just went with it. And you know, I've done this in the past, but you know, on and off. You know, and all that, but this time I was like, I'm gonna stick with this. I'm gonna write it out and let's see how it goes. I'll do 10 episodes, and if I'm not feeling it, at least I gave it 10 shots. You know, not do like, because you know, they say all the stats and all that after the first one, like it drops like 60, whatever the percentages are. So I just went with it and just kept getting more confident, getting more better. I was like, you know what, what's the right equipment and all that. I was like, let me invest and all that, and then just kept getting, you know, and then reaching out to people in the draft space. And that's where I kind of got confident. I was like, I remember Matt Babcock was my first big guest. Sent them an email. I was like, I'm probably not going to get a reply. That same day hit me back. And I was like, now I'm like, okay, how do I do this? I've done it with friends, but I was like, now this is someone that like is respected in the basketball community. It's like, I gotta take this serious. Like, okay. And then I did it with him. We did an hour and I learned so much in that hour. And I was like, I don't know enough basketball. I thought I did. I don't know enough. And I learned that. And then I was like, the draft is so much fun and all that. And I was like, going to get dive in more to that. And that just kind of just snowballed into what I've done now and all that. And, you know, just the amount of dope people I've met throughout the whole, like, No Ceilings. Like, I remember talking to a bunch of you guys before even. I'm like, why doesn't this person have more than 50 followers? Like, it's kind of crazy and all that. And it just, you know, and I'm like, and it's kind of cool seeing you guys, you know, grow and all that. And like I said, with us. And then we just started talking draft. And it was like, yo, kind of like talking draft. This is fun. Mm-hmm. Doing these live drafts and like people like, you know, hitting me up, and like, and then it just turned into something that I didn't expect. I was like, whoa, whoa, now I got dads hitting me up, be like, hey, can you get my kid on your show so they can get some? I was like, yo, this is crazy. Talking to scouts, talking to people from Clutch. I was like, yo, this is cool. I never expected it. And it just took off from there. And now to have a point where like people, you know, like look forward to draft time and they ask me to like come on their show. I was like, I don't even think I'm not a, to where you guys are doing like really in depth, but like I'm like, that's cool for people to ask me to come on their show and talk the draft, or like when they think about a, you know, when some of the best, you know, draft heads ask me to come on, do like a mock draft and represent the Knicks and all that. I'm like, yeah, yeah. I think that's cool. And like what we were doing, we were doing a show for a while, you know, and you know how much, you know, we were able to help each other and see you, and then you get an opportunity in No Ceiling. That's pretty big. And like, this, that's why the draft is so, like, I forgot about any other sports, Steven. I used to be into the NFL draft hard. I can't, other than like the typical names we hear, like, I don't know who's the 15th best player in this. The 15th best player in the NBA draft is coming up, and maybe even next year, but like, I've been so glued to basketball. It's meant so much. And like these last 3 years, it's been so much fun. It's been so fun. Like that, like I said, the amount of people I've met and network with and like have real relationships with is something I've never envisioned that would happen. Like we're doing this right now. Like I didn't envision to like us have a, and it's not just basketball. We've had very deep conversations and all where it turned into, and we've never even met in person yet.
No.
And I know like if we were ever to meet in person, it would be like as if we've been knowing each other for 15 years and all.
Whole life, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, those are the things that have been the dopest part, is the relationships I've been able to build and all that. It's one thing to have a dope guest and all that, but I know that guest that I have a relationship with that person, you know, and we'd be able, and even with players, I've had a relationship with kids that were coming out of the draft a few years ago that we still talk to. And it's like, it's been fun. This whole basketball thing is taking over, and it's like, it's just been a blast, bro. Like, this is dope that I'm doing this. Like, I've been excited. I didn't get to sleep, bro. I've been writing down process. I've been watching Jordan Hawkins highlights again, you know, coach. I was like, a bunch of guys and all that. I was like, this is dope. So I'm looking forward to this, bro. And of course, WrestleMania talk. I can't wait for that.
Dude, we it's like I said, like I'm going to title this podcast, it's, you know, Home and Away with Chris LeBron. Never forget where you come from, man, because like I said, you took a chance on me, you know, with Off the Ball Network, and I had a pretty, I would say, decently successful for 2 years of having an NBA podcast, you know, sponsorships with Manscaped and stuff like that.
We did well, and I always look back and it's like everybody wants more, right? You always want more,
of course,
but it's like a network that I just started from like just an idea. We got some pretty, you know, a lot of respect, you know, we got a lot of respect where you see Off the Ball Network and you're like, okay, they got
those
something.
Dudes know
they,
sports,
those dudes know sports. And like for you to be able to go on and do bigger, better things. And a lot of guys that have left, you know, have gone on to do some pretty cool things. You know, our guy Jerry's at ESPN and all
ESPN.
That.
Like, that's huge.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, if I'm like the double A, if I'm the G League, you know, some people may take that to offense. Like, oh, I want to be a, everybody wants to. It's like, but sometimes you gotta be real and all that. I'm like, I'm cool being the G League. If people are going to come to me and be like, hey, what's this guy? He's good. And I'm always, I'm not one, oh, you can't have him, can't poach him. It's like, no, I'm going to tell you, he's really good at this, you know, and all that. Yeah. Like they've come a long way. And you've seen people at the network that have grown from, you know, not to say nothing, but like grow from not having a big base to
puppies,
like now
puppies
and to now they're, you know, they're full on dogs and all that. So that to me is also a great part of seeing that, as people seeing grow from a network that's just started from, you know, just an idea and like kind of, you know, has the respect it has to this day.
Yeah, it's got that New York hustle to it, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, you got to represent, you represent the Knicks, you represent the Giants, you represent all of sports, and you're just, you're an everyday man's man, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, from the relationship that we've had, from you giving me a shot, from us podcasting together, doing shows together, all that, I'm super excited to have you on today's show, brother. But we got the mushy gushy stuff out the way. You know, we got to start with that. But so we're a draft show. I kind of, this is almost a formality because I'm really excited about our next conversation. But I got to get you on here, man, because like you mentioned, you got an eye for talent. You know what I'm saying? So I wanted to ask you for five prospects that you are considering like your dudes, like guys that you watch and you're all about it. And just to put it out there, this isn't, you know, Scoot Henderson, Victor Wembanyama, Brandon Miller.
Obvious, yeah.
Like, not the top dudes. These are your favorite or, you know, some prospects that you enjoy watching. So the first one that you have is a name that's rising a lot. You know, I've seen a few people release, you know, draft breakdown footage of him. I have him 10th on my board, and I was able to watch him in person and interview him. That's Taylor Hendricks out of UCF, man. So I know why I like him. I have him in my top 10. There's people at No Ceilings that like him even more than me. So how much do you like him, and what about his game just kind of speaks to you?
I love his game. I've been on the train with him, you know, since the first time I saw him play earlier this season. And it just, he has all the traits you want in an NBA wing. He has the size, 6'9", well, probably 7 foot of wingspan and all that, can shoot consistently too, can defend and all that. And it's just something I'm like, oh my God, I just visioned him on the Knicks. I'm just like, oh, okay. Like I tried to put them on my team. Like, oh, I would love this player. And you know,
could he play for Tibbs? Would Hendricks be a Tibbs?
He could play defense. So if he could play defense, he'll be on the court and all that, and then everything else will come into fruition, and he'll like that because I think the offense can translate and all that. But yeah, he's just someone that I've just been on, and when I'm on someone, I'm on. And so like he's been someone that I heard about in the high school scene and all that. And I was like, all right, let me follow him and see. And he's just risen a lot this year and all that. And what's good is like with about him is that it didn't, like, especially when it's non-conference play, sometimes records and stats can be a little, you know, inflated, you know, because you're playing against freaking, you know, North Carolina, upstate, down central Connecticut University. And it's like, all right, you know, but then in conference play, you see it matched up and all that, the stats, you know, even, you know, staying, you know, at the same level. So you saw that progress. Okay, he could play. You see him against big time competition, you know, I was like, okay, this kid is good and all that. And like some of the little things, like, you know, how he reacts and, you know, when a guy drives and he's coming from the weak side and all that, the little things I saw, and I'm like, if he gets into the right program in the NBA, man, if somebody molds him properly, this kid can be, you know, a potential all-star level player. And I think that's why people are finally seeing that. And that's why he's risen, right? Some people have him as high as 10. And all that. And I'm like, you know, he's someone that's just, he's very intriguing. He could shoot it. You know, like I said, his length and all that, super athlete and all that. So he's just someone that he's going to wow a lot of people, especially goes to the combine. Yeah. He's going to wow a lot of people, make a lot of people. And it's crazy because it feels like we get one of these under the radar like guys who are not top 10 guys coming out, you know, high school and all that. And and then suddenly they're a top 10 pick, and I feel like he's going to be one of them. He's going to be a special one.
Yeah. So we actually talked about him yesterday on Draft Deeper, and he's a guy that I had as one of the biggest risers. And I spoke about him glowingly. You know, I had a chance, like, just listening to him talk about his game and how he assesses where he is, Chris, I always find it super appealing whenever you hear a dude talk about his game in a realistic manner. You know, he's not one of these dudes that's like, nah, you know, just my role on this team, y'all, I haven't gotten to show my full bag yet. Like, there's more to my game, to where you kind of almost have to take dude at his word. Taylor was very upfront with me when I asked him, you know, hey, you've made all these strides in your game. What's next on your to-do list as far as like your improvements? And he said, my handle. Yes. I know that if I want to unlock my full potential, I got to be able to be trusted with the ball in my hand. And that was the thing that I wanted him to say, like when I framed the question, and he 4.0 answered it, man. Like he was all over it. And I think with an improved handle, obviously as he gets bigger and older, he's going to get stronger. You know what I mean? So that'll help those weaknesses. Mm-hmm. But being able to come in, Chris, like you said, at 6'9", shooting 40% from deep, being an incredible rotational shot block and playmaker. I always tell people, if you want to know why I like Taylor Hendricks, watch him play. Don't even look at the ball when he's on defense. Just watch him. Eventually, you'll end up watching the ball, like when it's all said and done. Like, he finds his way to the ball handler pretty frequently. Yeah. You mentioned the competition. I remember he was dominating. He had one great game against Drew Pember for UNC Asheville, and that was like a clash of the Titans for some of these like unsung heroes. Yep. And then he was going to go play against Houston. And we were talking about it for on our No Ceilings group chat. And we were like, hey, man, like this is his first big test. And he stood up, man, because
Hendricks played good.
And Jairus Walker is not a small guy.
Large man.
He is a mountain. So I was pretty impressed with that. And then ever since December, I've been like, this dude is an NBA player. It's just to what degree do you believe that he is, you know? So
yes,
I'm with you on Taylor. Now, the next guy, you already said his name earlier. You mentioned Jordan Hawkins. Now, he is a very popular player among the No Ceilings crew that we have here. I have him at 20. I'm probably like one of the quote-unquote low men on him, but I feel like I see what people are seeing with him. But how do you break down his game? Because I feel like his strength is a really prominent strength, but I'm interested to see what you think about the rest of his game.
And I know because it's the shooting, right? Obviously. And then you look at like his overall field percentage and it doesn't match, right? Because he's a better three-point shooter. But I think there's more to his game. And I think that's what's intriguing about it because he has the athletic ability. He has some of the twitchiness. You know, I was watching a few highlights and he's almost yamming on people. So I'm like, there's more to it. And we know in college sometimes, you know, you can't show your full bag essentially. And I feel like with him, it's like, yes, the shooting, off-ball shooting, everything, off-picker, everything is like, it gets people like thinking like Seth Curry. But I'm like, I think Seth Curry with a little bit more athleticism. And to me, that's the intriguing thing with him because he could do all that and then he can get to the basket. No, I think he needs to do that more. I feel like I want to see him do that more because he can do that, you know, because you know
everyone, you think it's because he's on a deep UConn team.
I think that's exactly it. There's so many guys on that, and especially you know in college, you know, when you got so many guys, you're just not going to be able to show that. And I think he's someone that, you know, is going to be very intriguing and all that. And if he's able to get to do a little bit more with the ball in his hand and get to the basket more, I think you're going to see more of his game. And it's going to be scary because now how do you guard him? He can take you off the dribble and then, you know, he's going to do his little Steph Curry stuff. And like, it's going to be tough to guard. I think that's what has me so intrigued with him and why a lot of people are intrigued. Cause I think there's another level. The shooting is going to be there, but like there's another level to his game where, that's very scary. So I think that's why people are starting to pick up on him and think, whoa, you know, in that 20 range, if he's in that 20 range, someone's going to get a hell of a player. They're going to get a hell of a player.
No, for sure. And I think with me, it's like, he looks like he's a better athlete defensively than he does on the offensive end, which if you got to pick one to be more athletic in, I would say defense is probably where you're going to do yourself the most favors. I don't know, the connective stuff kind of has me worried about thrusting him like into that lottery, like potential top 10 range.
No, I get you on that.
The being chased off the line stuff worries me a little bit, but at the same time, he can relocate so well. Like he's a very good guy at what Corey Tolliver calls 0.5 basketball, right? Where it's like you catch the ball, you got the shot, you got the drive. All right, throw the pass. And then when he throws the pass, he's not just hanging out in one spot. He is immediately relocating somewhere else. Like he might have like the most miles on his tires out of any prospect this season because he's constantly moving. So, and the movement shooting is a real thing too, you know, like it kind of worries me though, because there are a lot of good shooters in this draft. I think hands down, he's the best movement shooter, but I think
100%.
I'm also curious too, Chris, do you think he's really 6'5"?
That could
be a
stretch.
Really 6'5"?
It could be a stretch.
Okay.
I think a little bit of a stretch.
I'm very interested in what his measurements are because
that's going to be clutch. That's going to be very crucial.
Yeah. I mean, it is for a lot of people, but at 6'5", I think that's like one of those metrics where like, if you're under, I think people are going to knock you more severely as opposed to like, if you're listed at 6'8", but you're really like 6'6", 6'7", you know what I mean? So
Yeah. If he's like 6'2", 6'3", I think it could, but if he's legit 6'5" or 6'4" and some change,
yeah,
that's definitely someone that you know you get intrigued. But if he's 6'2", I think, as you can say, he has a tendency to get moved off. You know, if you get a stronger defender and all that, he can definitely get pushed off. And like I said, it's not going to be as easy, you know, at the NBA level. But if he's a legit 6'4", 6'5", I think that helps him a lot. So that's going to be interesting to see at the combine what happens.
I love the comps too that I hear with him. Like I can't get Buddy Hield out of my head whenever I'm comparing Jordan Hawkins. I see a lot of Buddy.
Buddy Hield is a good one. There's some Quentin Grimes to him too.
Okay.
And I had visions of him and Quentin and Hawkins in New York with Brunson, you know, and all that. And Hart. And yeah, we have a nice little thing going on. But yeah.
No RJ? What's up? What's up? No RJ?
RJ, that's a podcast in itself.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
RJ
we'll push that aside. We'll push that aside.
I love him, but I have a love hate relationship with RJ Barrett.
There you go. All right. Speaking of guys that we love, I love Trace Jackson Davis. I'm in love and I don't care who knows it. You know, I wrote about him during the season. The thing that interests me the most and the thing that has like made him so appealing to me, Chris, is like the one thing we've always said about Trace is that he just needs to shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. And he goes and gets ready for the combine. He runs a lot of guard drills and skills and all that stuff. Gets sick, can't do anything, comes back. And guess what, Chris? He doesn't shoot the ball. But you know what he does do? He playmakes. Like, it turns out that at his position, mm-hmm. not every five needs to be able to shoot the ball to improve their draft stock. Sometimes you can just be a post playmaker too, like a legit one. A legit playmaker, and a big
good one. Legit, yes. Good one.
Absolutely. So the growth in his playmaking, the assist, his movement, the rim protection, he's a little undersized.
Yes.
At 6'9", but he has incredible leaping ability and strong AF. Mm-hmm. So what do you like about Trace, man? Like let's let the love unflow here on TJD.
You hit it on the head because everybody and their mama was like, oh, he needs to be a better shooter and all mm-hmm. that. And I was like, how does a guy go from not being a shooter to suddenly, you know, shooting, you know, 100 threes in this? That doesn't really happen. Maybe over
especially
time.
Especially in Indy's offense, too. Like, yeah. he's getting fed in the post, and he's dominating. So, like, why is Coach Woodson going to be like, hey, dude, like, let's go
stand up 100 threes a year. Yeah. All that because the NBA scouts are telling you you have to shoot and all that. It's like, that's just not the case, especially when you're dominant in the post and all that. So to me, that was the big thing is like, okay, let's see what he improves. And I'm like, oh, and I think, you know, he could have fed into that and be like, all right, let me just work on, and I'm sure he worked on it, but it worked. Maybe it didn't flow. It doesn't flow in the offense and all that. So he just like, all right, there's gotta be something else. And he worked on the playmaking. The passing was superb this season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I felt like that got people to be like, okay, the shooting is not – he's not going to be a three-point. Maybe over time, because sometimes, like, Brook Lopez, you'll see, like, 10 years down
Horford,
the line.
Yeah.
Al Horford. When the guys are not athletic enough and they have to – maybe down the line. But that's – we're talking about maybe a decade or more, 5 plus 10 years down the line. The playmaking is what mm-hmm. I saw. And I was like, ah, oh, I love it. And I loved him before, last year. Even without, you know, all that playmaking and all that, I still thought maybe he's a top 45. Like I bet on the talent and all that, his shot blocking, and that was the biggest thing is the playmaking. So yeah, I'm not going to be a 3-point shooter, but hey guys, I could pass it, and on the post, that's still a valuable ass. Even in the NBA, that's still a valuable thing to be able to pass out them. Because in today's age of big men, if you can't pass out of a double talk team or anything, you're not playing. You're not playing. We see some of the bigs that were relevant five, and they're not relevant now because they can't get past out of a double team and all that. You can't pass and all that. You're not going to be on the court much, you know. And we're seeing the evolution of the big man passing. You know, some of the best big men. You know, you look at Joker, like he's tremendous and all that. We see a lot
Sabonis.
Of like, you know, Sabonis, Sengun,
so many, yeah.
You know, some of those guys. Can pass it.
Rob Williams got some passing.
Yeah. You know, that's so like, that's what I saw. And that's what I loved. I was like, okay, like this kid is legit. And he dominated a lot of games. You know, I think he had like a 10 block game this year against, I forgot who, but he had like a 9 or 10 block game this year. Like he really showed that impact on the defensive side. And I feel like we tend to, you know, with 5-star players, because he was a 5-star coming out, we tend to just like, all right, he's a senior five. He was a 5-star. He's mm-hmm. a senior now. That's not a first round pick and all that. But when you watch his gameplay and his constant, you know, evolution each year, that's something that is still valuable and all that. Yeah, he's a senior, but this kid's going to come in. He's going to be able to make, you know, maybe, you know, play some real minutes right away. and play good minutes too. He'd be able to defend some of these bigger bigs and like say his passing and all that. So I think someone's going to be able to get themselves a great player, great leader. You know, we saw his leadership this year and all that. And man, he's just a real gamer, and he can affect on both sides of the ball and all. So this kid is, he came back and his stock's gonna get better. I don't see how he's not a first round pick and all that. I think he is. I would, especially in the back end and all that. So
I got him 24th right now.
That's a good spot. That's a good spot.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head, man, when you talk about like him being a returner and coming in. I think that we need to kind of tone it down a little bit on the age conversation and like how important it is, at least in the first a couple of seasons, man, because all these young dudes just aren't ready. Chris, like, let's talk about some of the NBA players right now who are having great success in their rookie season. Walker Kessler wasn't a first year. It wasn't a one and done. Keegan Murray, not a one and done. Ben Mathurin, not a one and done. Jalen Williams, not a one and done. So, I mean, there's a lot of these rookies that are coming out having success that are going to be like on first all NBA, like all rookie first teams, multi-year dudes, man. So, I mean, Trayce Jackson-Davis, getting those reps in, reps are very important. It's one thing if you're a hypothetical player out of one season and you have tools and potential, but not talent and production, and you come in and you don't get those reps, like it's hard to actualize that potential. You know what I mean? Like so much of it is situation, timeline, expectations, all of that. So Trayce Jackson-Davis coming in late first round, some of these teams with multi picks like the Pacers, you know, they might be able to get them a value play at the back end of the first round.
He'd be perfect for the Pacers. Perfect.
Yeah. I think they'd go nuts, man. I think they'd go nuts. All right, so let's get to your fourth guy. And I saw a very bold tweet from someone that I follow on Twitter that said that Kobe Bufkin gives them – who was it? Jalen Brunson vibes. Jalen Brunson vibes. So, obviously, that's going to make him very valuable in your eyes. I have him as a 22nd prospect. Could be talked up a little bit. I'm not going to lie. But talk to me about Kobe Bufkin, man, because that's high praise coming from you saying that he gives you Brunson vibes.
It's crazy if you just, you know, if you just watch him and you watch Brunson right after, you're like, oh, I see it.
Yeah.
And it took me a little bit to see it. I've heard some people say that. And I was like, okay. Because sometimes comps, I don't even like comping because all that, because then it sets you up. It could set you up to fail and like, oh, this guy didn't live up to be that. But I'm like, wow, a lot of his moves, a lot of those stop and goes, the spin move, the jump, you know, the mid-range and all. I'm like, it's very Brunson-like, you know, and he's a little taller than Brunson, you know, and all that. And I was like, oh, my God, this kid is legit and all. And he got better throughout the year and all that, where I'm like, I think he's the team's best player. I think we thought maybe Jet was the best player, you know, the best perimeter player and all that. But I was like, I think Kobe's the best perimeter player on his team and all that, and he could do more than Jet, you know. I think with Jet
on the
next
hand,
level, with the ball in his hand, I think Jet can do some good things as far as shooting in the next level. But Kobe, I think there's legit like three level potential and all that, and the shooting improved so much from year one to year two, freshman year to sophomore year and all that. He's very relaxed. He's not out of control, you know, especially in pick and rolls, finds his spots and all that. A lot of this, and you look at it, it's like that's what you're supposed to do at the NBA level, and he does that. He's very patient and all that, can get to the basket. He's sneaky athletic and all that, where some people, I look like some watching some film, like some people were shocked that he was able to get up like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think as long as he continues to improve, you know, the shot and his range and all that, I think someone's going to get themselves a good player. And he just, the last few months with him, I'm like, oh, I'm starting to really like this kid. And just like over time, I'm like, He reminds me of Jalen Brunson. You know, he really does a lot of the little stuff he does. You know, it just really reminds me of Jalen. So that's why I was like, oh, and I obviously being a Knicks fan, I'm seeing what Jalen's doing and seeing more up close. You know, I saw some with Dallas, but not watching him, you know, night in, night out. I'm like, oh, wow. And I see Kobe. I'm like, oh, there's a lot of similarities to the game. And then that's why I think, you know, and I, the progression to, you know, improve. I love when guys just, you know, not the greatest role year one, but then they year two, they take advantage of that, and then boom, they take off. And it's like, that's really good to see that. There was a tough year for Michigan overall. They didn't make the tournament. You know, some maybe some turmoil going on there and all that, but
Dickinson is in the portal now.
Yeah, he's in the portal and all that. So, you know, Jets going pro. I think that a couple guys go to the portal, but, you know, he definitely showed out, and he was definitely the bright spot for that Michigan team. So, you know, he's going to go pro, and I think I wouldn't be surprised back into that lottery. I really would be surprised. Okay. Yeah.
I know that we got some fans here. The Tylers, Metcalf and Rucker, really like them a lot. There's a couple other guys that are there. I'm probably last one arriving at the party on him. I got him at 22, but I think that this class is pretty freaking deep. With that being said, let's get to the last guy that we want to discuss. GG Jackson.
Yes.
So not a lot of people are putting their flag in his camp. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a lot of people that are willing to come out and say, he is my guy. There's people that like him. There's people that see talent and respect and honor the talent, but not a lot of people are coming out and saying that GG Jackson is my guy. So please talk to us, man. Like, why is he your guy? Like, why is it beyond just saying, okay, I recognize potential, I recognize talent?
I feel like we have to, yes, we can look at all the analytics and all just the stats and just be like, all right, well, inefficiency and all that. But sometimes you just got to go a little bit deeper into that and put the situation in perspective. Like,
so you're saying context matters.
Context matters too.
Okay.
Like, and like, we see this with a lot of prospects. If you just look at the stats and all that, you're like, well, he's inefficient and all that. And I know he's had some moments where he looks immature and all that, but let's put the situation. He's 17 years old, going to play high level SEC basketball.
Yes.
Okay, that's first, all right? So remember,
As the guy on the team.
And then let's be real, like, they had a couple solid players, but they don't have guys that are going to be playing at the NBA level. Like, so he has that situation and all right? He was supposed to go to Carolina, and I thought he made the right decision, because I feel like if he did go to Carolina, and we saw how Carolina ended up this year, he might have just kind of lost in that whole thing, and we might not even talk about GG Jackson right now. He may be in the portal, you know, because that situation just got out of hand and all that. But 17 years old, it's tough for a 17-year-old to just do anything in life, let alone now you're the face of the team and you got to play down south, you know, playing in SEC country. You know, that's tough and all. Yeah. And you're the guy, you're the number one prospect in the country, and you're choosing people who are already like, why are you coming to South Carolina and all that? And there's a lot of pressure and all that. And you're not playing with a lot of, you know, guys that maybe not, so not his level, but like close to it and all that.
Yeah.
And so he had a lot to handle, right? Being the guy, having the ball in his hand. And, you know, when you don't trust your teammates because they don't have the same, you know, close ability, that's tough. And that's what I felt like I saw when I was watching, was like, he didn't trust his teammates and all that. And you know, I felt like, you know, he had to do everything and all. Yeah. And I feel like, and I get why people get frustrated with him and all that. But I just feel like when you're the guy in high school, now you're going in South Carolina, you're the guy there. It's tough because you want to live up to that potential and all that. And like, you know, is it people talking about being the top five player prospect coming out? And I felt like he tried to do too much this year, and especially late in the season and all that. Got it. But I feel like the context needs to matter, like who he's playing with, the system and all that wasn't the best and all that. Yeah, like I said, he could have went to Carolina, but I feel like he would have get lost in there. It's just, you know, it was a tough situation for him. So I feel like we had to put that perspective. Once we get to the combine and get to know him better, understand him, and he interviews well, I think we can get a better feeling about GG. But I don't think we can just look at on the court. Yes, there's things that he needs to work on, but on the court, let's just not base everything on that. There's got to be more context to all that and to understand the player, because the player is a top three player in this draft. To me.
Yeah. I mean, he's a high school player playing SEC D1 basketball, leading a team.
Supposed to be a high school senior right now.
Supposed to be at prom, you know, supposed to be studying for an algebra exam, you know? And he is leading a team in the SEC as a 17-year-old basketball player, right? That means something, man. And he's scoring as the number one guy on a scouting report against SEC competition.
Yeah, he's the option. You know? They're not worried about anyone else on that course, even. They're worried about, do not let GG go crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. And so, you know, we're expecting a 17, 18 year old to try to figure that out right away. And we're yeah. getting on him. Yes, there's things you can get on him, like, as far as his attitude and as far as how he presents himself on the court. But understand the frustration. There's legit. We would be frustrated in some of those. We'd be like, come on. Mm-hmm. I passed him. Y'all worried about my assist to turnover ratio, but I passed him. I made the right play, but the guy didn't finish.
There's some Johnny Davis stuff on the film yeah. with him, you know, where yeah. he's throwing these passes.
He's making the passes, and the guys yep. aren't making it. You know, he's average. You know, he didn't average a lot of assists, but like he probably could average more, but he just didn't have the team. He probably could average 3-4 assists, but this is. Just didn't have the right teammates and all that. So I feel like we got to look at that because he's, you know, I've seen some people have him, you know.
Like, I have him 16. I have him 16.
That's fair. I've yeah. seen 30. I've seen sick around and I'm just like, no, we can't. No, that's just can't be the. That's not Jaden Hardy. This.
Let's the Instagram was not that bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The Instagram thing. That. I think, yeah. man, that means he cares. He wants it.
Yeah. I think that. I think you could spin it in a negative way. And that's easy. What, you know, that's how it tends to happen. You know,
if we've seen anything this week, is that you watch a college athlete do something on the court and you want to, you know, make all kinds of stuff.
We kill them and all that. Like, we forget these are young people. Like, mm-hmm. we were, you know, the young people. And like I said, with him, you know, being 17, 18 years old, like, the weight of the world's on you, feeling the pressure and all that. And, you know, but there's still stuff on tape that you're like, oh my God. Oh like, my
dudes
God.
At his position aren't supposed to do the things that he does.
No, you know? Not at all. Not at all. A 6'10" guy who can handle the ball, can score from any point on the court, has a limited range and all that, can take dudes off the dribble, can finish, you know, and it's scary what he can do with the ball in his hands.
And let him be in an environment that's going to promote growth and promote development and promote mm-hmm. culture and understanding. You know what I mean? Like, give dude a shot in that environment before we write him off. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's yeah. not just be like, okay, one scene is in South Carolina. Like, he was good enough to get recruited by UNC. And, you know, those dudes don't do anything wrong. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, so. Like, I get why people are having frustrations with him because they see – There is flaws, obviously. Defensively, of course. Sometimes it's like, I'm like, Gigi, what are you doing, bro? Like, why are you
processing not is?
Yeah, yeah, it feels like he's thinking way too much. Like, everything's mm-hmm. going a million miles per hour because he feels like he has
or to. Or he's just everything. Simply not interested sometimes.
And there's sometimes this you see that, like, okay, he has no interest. But there's a lot of times you see a lot of those highlights and they're down 30.
Mm-hmm.
And it's down 25. And I'm not making excuses, but it's like,
it's a contributing factor.
Contributing factor. Like, man, I dropped 25 and we're still down by 20. It's like, yeah. I'm doing everything. I'm trying to, I have to force shots because who else is going to do that?
I got to drop 25 and guard the other team's best player.
And now you want me to use all my energy on their side. And like, I know everybody wants everybody to be a two-way player.
Of course,
and all
yes.
that. It's even, you know, that's, it's sometimes not realistic. Because
sometimes
I need you to slack a little on defense so you can do your thing on offense. Let's just be real. We just got to be real. Like, it's everybody wants everyone all two-way, all that. Well, let's be real, guys. You know, I need you to be more effective on offense, defense. We'll figure out the defense if we have the players and all that. But sometimes you got to be a little real. But there's things that are frustrating on the defensive end and all that. But, you know, it was a tough situation and all that. And like, not making excuses, but – it's a tough spot for young 17-year-olds supposed to be in high school right now to be the face of the team and all that and have to handle everything. And like we saw, even with him, you know, he got benched a few games and all that. I think against Kentucky, he got benched and all that, or Ole Miss, mm-hmm. you know, a few games in there. But, you know, and he learned from that and he bounced back a little bit. You know, I remember that Bama game, you know, that was a big game. That felt like a big time atmosphere and all that. And he played, but they just didn't have enough guys. I watched in that game and he's, You know he hearing about Brandon Miller and not even the off-court stuff. I'm talking about like draft stock. Like, he knows mm-hmm. Brandon Miller's the item of the month and all that, top three pick potential. And he's like, and you know he feels I'm just as good, if not better, than Brandon Miller. But Brandon
top
Miller
two has, freshman scores in the SEC.
Brandon Miller's
right there.
Got a bunch of potential pros on his team, and they're the number one, whatever they were, number one, number two in the country at the mm-hmm. moment. You know, so you and this. At the second half, he just didn't have enough because there's just not enough talent. So he's going to be tough. I don't think he's anywhere near where people have him in the 32nd round or in the late 20s and all. Like you just said, you had him 16th. I think that could be a spot. I think he's going to be in that lottery, late lottery around that range. I think he's a top five player. Just talking about talent, because what he has NBA qualities. Like what he does can translate to the next level. But if he gets in the mid-teens, he's probably going to go to a little better situation where he's not have to be the guy. And that might be better for him because he can get better leadership and all that. And have a good guy around him, especially if they got the right vets around him to be like, hey, kid, you got talent, but we need to tone it down a little bit. You don't have to force it. Hey, let's just hone it down. Because if they get him right, someone's getting an all-star. He has all-star level talent. You can see it. Somebody's going to get themselves a special player in the mid-teens, and people are going to be like, man, why did we overreact to, you know, his shrugging the shoulders, Instagram and shrugging their shoulders when they're down 30, you know, to Mississippi. Yeah. I think the Mississippi State, whoever they play, they were down 30. He's like, I'd be mad too. I'd be like, whatever, guys, we're down. But, you know, sometimes I hate when people criticize these kids too much. And at the end of the day, it's still like when we get mad that a 16 beats a one and like, oh, how did that happen? It's like, these are kids.
Mm-hmm.
These are kids at the end of the day and all that. And like they can get better. They can mature and all that. We want 17-year-olds to be fully mature already. You know, and sometimes it's not really, you know, we're old. We're all immature at 17. But I understand you're going to invest millions.
But I'm immature at 33. So
I'm immature at 34 sometimes. I'm wearing a wrestling shirt. I'm wearing my hat backwards.
Okay. So that's a great spot. We'll take a break here. We'll get a commercial in. And then after that, we'll wrap up the draft conversation. We're going to talk some wrestling. But first, we're going to take a break here. All right, we're back. So everybody who stuck with us through that commercial break, welcome back. For you wrestling heads, the rest of this episode is for you. You can see, if you're watching, that Chris is wearing a Smoking Skull t-shirt. I'm rocking my black and white NWO shirt. And if you didn't notice, if you did not know this, WrestleMania happened this past week, Chris. I am 11 years old every time WrestleMania comes on, dude. I tweeted that out. I don't care. Like, I'm old enough to where I don't care if people think like, oh, you watch wrestling, you know it's fake. Like, yeah, I know, so are movies, and I like to go watch movies. You know what I mean? So the stuff that people sing about in songs are fake too, you know? So I mean, and there's science fiction books and I still read them.
But I get more, Steven, I get more mad. You can say my team suck, whatever, to me. You could say I suck. Yeah. You say wrestling's fake? Oh, I go get I blow a gasket. I can't stand that word fake.
Yeah.
We don't say that about the Avengers. Oh, that's really
Fast 27.
Or Fast and Furious or any of these movies. Like, I don't say, well, that's fake. That didn't really happen. No, you just didn't. Like, I don't go to a play. I don't go to see a lot. Like, I went to see Lion King a few years back. I'm not going to be like, this is fake.
That's not a real lion.
Simba's dad didn't really die. Like, or like this. I know how, like,
animals can't talk, stupid.
Animals can't talk. Like, you know, Mufasa is not really going to, like,
I'm with
you. Word fake. And if you say that to a wrestler to their face, that's like calling them the worst word possible in the world or dissing their family. Like, it's a derogatory word. Like, you remember what? It just gets me all so mad.
We'll get to some very real things that happened in WrestleMania.
Guys got really hurt yesterday too.
So some dudes got really hurt. So Chris, we'll start with night one. Let's go to Austin Theory versus John Cena.
Man,
I don't get the Theory push. I don't like him. I'm not a Theory guy. The Cena match didn't change anything for me. I'm sorry if you're a Theory dude. I just don't get him. I don't get the A-Town down being a thing with him because he doesn't act like an Atlanta dude. He doesn't really do anything Atlanta other than A-Town down. He's like trying too hard to be a punk that doesn't care. And I'm like, okay, like if you don't care, then why do I care? You know what I mean? So I don't know. He's a tough character for me, man.
He's tough because I look at it both ways. It's like I don't know what he's going to be in a few years, but I can understand why they push him because he is a young talent. He is talented in the ring and all that. He's been someone that's been in this limelight for a little bit. Like, he was in Evolve, and like, they did a documentary on him. Like, and this was maybe, I could get my years off, but maybe like 3, 4, 5 years ago. And I remember hearing about them, like, and like, this, everyone was saying, like, yo, this, if there's ever going to be a guy next after Roman, it could be Theory. And I watched his stuff, and it's like, and he's still young and all that, but you know, there's still things they have to figure out with the character. And like, they tried it with the money when he won Money in the Bank and all that. And like, yeah, when Vince was truly like, you know, head of the creative and all that. Now, like, they're giving him a shot, but you know, I don't know, it's tough for
him. The cheap wins, like biting, yeah, John Cena.
Yeah, like, and
why do you want us to hate this dude so bad and then push him as like a real?
I don't
talent?
See real like animosity with people when they when he comes out. I don't see the real, like, people can't stand him. You know, it could be forced at times with him. Like, they want it, like, sort of like, not to the case of Roman early on. I don't feel like Roman was forced early. It was a little bit after we're forming.
I feel like forced, Dominic Mysterio, who we'll talk about later, like, works a crowd better as a heel.
Yes. And that's what you want in a heel. Where, like, legit, like, oh, like, I want to see him get his rear end kicked. Like, I want that to happen. And with Theory, you don't get that feeling.
I just want his match to be over so I can watch.
Yeah. And then, you know, John is definitely he's showing his age too.
Yeah, the bald spot in the back.
It's not even just the balls, it's just his moves and all. He doesn't move the same.
He's thin. He's
46, I think, you know, so that's expected. He's put miles on his body, you know. But you know, it was an all right.
Yeah, I feel like he had like very Hogan-esque moments in the match.
You can't see me stuff, like the crowd, which I've never heard the crowd, you know, that loud be like, you can't see me. So he still gets the pop. And I think that's going to be his role going forward with the company. He's going to come back, like, whenever you hear, and maybe not late with Hogan, because Hogan's kind of messed up his aura, mm-hmm, with all the off mat stuff. I was trying to say off the court. I was like, no. Yeah. You know, I think that's going to be his role. For now, he's gonna come in, you know, a few times a year, do his thing, and get the pop, and boom. But the match was all right, you know, solid, you know, to get started.
We knew what was gonna happen.
Yeah, we knew Theory was gonna win and all. Yeah,
we knew Theory was gonna win. He literally like bit his way to victory.
Yeah,
he's super lame, dude. It's like when Shinsuke Nakamura was doing the whole low blow thing with AJ Styles.
Yeah, and he even did that after he beat AJ Styles. I mean, where after AJ beat him, oh, was it AJ? Yeah, AJ beat him at, mm-hmm, WrestleMania and all. He did the low blow, and it's like, sometimes it's the booking, sometimes. And we're going to talk about that later.
The gimmicky stuff, yeah.
It's still like, you expect it differently with Triple H under the helm, and it's like, it's still the same old... same old WWE booking and all that. They've been doing it for 30 years, you know, so.
Yep.
Should know better.
They get their reactions. All right, we don't have to talk too much about the 4-way men's tag team showcase.
It was solid. It was fun.
It was a better match than what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Like, they put on a heck of a show. But at the end of the day, it's like, what is it for? That's like...
If they come up with like the Street Profits, you know, getting back to being hot and being in the tag team scene, you know, because now it feels like the tag team division, you know, with how end of night one ended, you know, maybe gets back to being hot and all that, then, you know, there could be some fun matches you could do with the Street Profits and all that. But it was a solid showcase. And I think they did it the way they had it produced, a showcase. I think this showcased a lot of the talent, and we're like, and a lot of people are like, oh, well, you need the guy pushing these guys more. And I think we're going to see that, you know, coming out of Mania.
Yeah, for sure. All right. We'll keep it rolling, man. Let's talk Mysterio. We know that Rey got inducted into the Hall of Fame on Friday. So what I love about talking wrestling with you, man, is like how much of a historian you are. I loved Rey since WCW. You know, when we had WCW and WWF, I watched both, but I gravitated more so to the WCW. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of people don't admit to that. I still
Well, you're down south too, so it makes sense too. You know, they're They're Atlanta. That's what they called them, Atlanta, and they called WWE New York.
Exactly. So Ray wrestled in a group called the Filthy Animals for a little while, and Conan was a part of that group, and Conan gave like one of the most beautiful induction speeches.
Because it was kind of a dull Hall of Fame, and then Conan got in there and he even buried people too. But that's what Conan does, and like he's so good. I wish they would use him like on real, but I know that he's you're taking a risk when you put Conan on the mic, so you might, you know, have to pay some fines and all that. But to me, he needs to be on a fixed because he's a tremendous. He could be the Hispanic Paul Heyman
and all. Yeah, that. MVP.
You can put him with someone that's not strong on the mic, an Hispanic that's not strong on the mic,
like Escobar. Give him
Conan. Yeah, same like what they did with Brock with Heyman, right? That Hispanic Brock Lesnar type. And they're not fluid in English and all that. Just give him Conan, and he's gonna elevate. I wish they would do that. I wish that. But he's a legend, Conan. When he was doing the stuff with the Wolfpack and all that, he's so good. And the story, I knew about the story with him, Conan and Ray, and like how he kind of just gave him a shot. And it's kind of crazy how a guy like Ray, because we've seen WWE and other promotions try to promote the Hispanic mass wrestler, and it's failed miserably. Sin Cara, you know, there's a bunch of guys you could say. Del Rio, they forced Del Rio on us. They wanted him because he was different, and he was good, but he just wasn't the guy and all that. But Ray, his connection with the crowd, I was so happy he was able to get in the Hall of Fame because he's definitely deserved. He's one of the maybe the band like WCW.
My favorite wrestler ever.
He was a monster. WCW.
Yeah, he's my favorite wrestler ever, man. Like I dressed up like him when he was with the Filthy Animals for Halloween. I got like the baggy camo pants. I put the blonde in my hair. I did the little.
And when he took his mask off, like you see, show some people like, what? That's what he looks like. He's like, yeah, he's a baby face. Like I remember crying when he took off his mask because. You know, I was watching I was a WWE guy, but the reason why I like WCW was because of the cruiserweights. Like they start off their men. I remember when he lost to Kevin Nash or whoever, and they made him take. I was like, that hurts, and it's hard to get that back, to get back that mystique, because there's been plenty of other luchadors that lost their mask in WCW. That's why WCW is where it's at. Juventud Guerrero, did that. You know, a few guys have done it, but it's hard to get that mystique back, and he was able to get back and get back to being who he was, you know, so good for him to be in the Hall of Fame.
What did you think about the match between him and Dominic? I thought Dominic had some spots, man, where he looked like he could be, like, at least a middle card guy, like, for a long time in the WWE.
He's come a long way. He's come a long way since when he started. I felt like they were forcing it in the beginning and all that when he first got there, and like it wasn't clicking. He was getting like go away heat, and like they finally embraced it. Like, okay, he's not going to be a babyface. He's a heel. And when they had him turn on, I think it was a SummerSlam.
Yeah, it was.
When they with Edge when I
think the Judgment Day was like trying to get him to turn.
Yeah, because the Judgment Day was going through like a weird phase where it was like this isn't working, and then. They added Dom, and Dom's added another element because people love, and we just talked about heels. He's healing. He's what you want in a heel. You want, when he comes out, you want people to be like, oh man, I want to see him get. And now you add the element with Ray, and I thought they did it perfect because Ray, even if you could just tell Ray's that type of dad in real life, not like the deadbeat, but like, I'm not going to hurt my son.
He's a family man. Yeah.
He's a family man, and it became believable. Like, he probably wouldn't do this in real life. Like it would take something crazy for Ray to be like, I'm going to beat my son. And what it took him to badmouth his mom and all that, your wife and all that, and your sister. And then that sometimes you gotta be dad. And
you gotta take the belt off in the ring and literally spank his rear end.
And you gotta spank him and all that. And it was great storytelling and all that. And it was good that he got the win over Dominic and all that. And, But Dominic's come a long way too on the mic.
Yeah,
as a performer,
got in better shape. I think
got in better shape too, which is another thing too. Obviously, he's not going to be his dad as far as in the ring or just looks, but we
he's to way get a taller little, and does a lot of the same moves.
Yeah, he's a bigger guy and all that, and they implemented a lot of Eddie Guerrero stuff, and which was cool and all that. It was solid. You know, not a lot of times we get to see father versus son.
The second time ever in WWE history.
Yeah, well, you know, we've seen brother versus brother before. Yep. You know, WrestleMania, but never best friends have gone at it plenty of times, but we've never seen father son like this, and so that was pretty cool just to see that aspect of two generations going at it. I don't know when we might get to see this again, so that was pretty cool seeing that aspect though,
for sure. All right, so let's get into Seth Rollins and Logan Paul. Logan Paul might be a dude. Logan Paul might be a dude.
You know what's crazy, I was never a Logan Paul guy. Never, you know, because of all the, I just thought he was corny and all that. But I always respected him because, hey,
we don't need the Vine, man Ronda Rousey.
I was like, is he gonna come in and be serious about this? Because he's not a very, you don't look at him and then you see this is a person who takes things serious, and then you see him in the ring, is like, oh, he gets it. And
like this, I prefer him again. I'm going back to Austin Theory, like. Dominic works the crowd better. Logan Paul is like Logan, box office.
Oh, and he's
like,
the heel.
He needs
of all
to be
heels.
The U.S. He needs to be the U.S. champion.
Yeah, like he is a heel of all heels because he already has that natural smugness and like you want to punch him in the face, and then you add everything that he's done. All the bad things. Scamming all that. You add that. Yeah, Mayweather stuff and all that, and like people just don't like certain YouTubers, like his brother too. If his brother was ever to do this, I don't know if his brother moves like he doesn't move his brother. So I don't know if it would work as much, but he knows how to perform at the right. Mm-hmm. And we've seen people and they just don't know the little intricacies of wrestling and know how to their facials, how to use their face, how to use a crowd and all that.
Yeah. How can you talk moves. Without saying anything? Yeah.
How do you not sound like you're not from, you're a celebrity? And that's very hard to do. Especially when, and he said he wasn't a crazy wrestling fan and all that. So to come in and understand that as a non-wrestling fan.
And all the moves. Like, and then how expansive was his bad, dude?
And know how to sell. Because sometimes you would have that worry with celebrity. They don't know how to sell. They don't know when to sell. And if you didn't know anything about him, you'd be like, oh, this guy's been there for 10, 15 years. He knows what he's doing. He's a professional wrestler. And if I told you, he's only been doing it for maybe a year.
That's the thing. He even said it. He told Seth, he was like, it took you 20 years to do what it's only taken me to do in one. What I mean? And like,
and that's that could get wrestler hot. Like,
that's a shoot.
Right? That's a shoot. Like, maybe he's right. It took me this long to do it. And you're wrestling me. And you've only been doing this for a cup of coffee. So that's, that's crazy. He's really figured this out. So very impressive. Great match and all that. So
what do you think about Seth, man? Like, Seth did the celebrity work this time. Mm-hmm. I know that he's recently come out on like some interviews and stuff about talking about how Cody Rhodes like shows up after, and he didn't like say that he took the cheap way or anything like that. He gave Cody his flowers, but he's like, I've been holding it down for years over here. Like, I feel like I should be in the spot to challenge for the
title. Think that's a real feeling that wrestlers have, especially with Rhodes and Cody, because I don't think he ran away. Like, you could spin it like in a storyline, like, oh, you ran away and all that. But
they
weren't
using Cody in a way that was like, you're not along for the ride. What I'm saying? So he had to go find himself and then come back.
Yeah, and I can understand wrestlers feeling a type of way that this guy who's been gone for what six years or so, 7 years,
felt way longer.
It feels longer. Yeah, I think he left 2016, came back last year, 20. So 6 years essentially, goes somewhere else, creates a competition, right?
Yeah,
and comes back and is getting now. Wait, he's gonna beat me three times, and now he gets hurt, and he's gonna win Royal Rumble, and he's gonna main event with the guy.
I'm getting knocked out by Logan Paul.
And I'm like, no offense to Logan Paul, but I'm wrestling Logan Paul. That's a marquee match because of his Logan Paul's name. But it's like, and Seth has yet to main event a WrestleMania. He's been a part of a main event. He cashed in, but he has yet to be. He is the main event of the, and that means a lot to these wrestlers.
CM Punk, he's so over too.
Yeah, and he's like, CM Punk still can't get over that he did not main event WrestleMania 28 when being that triple threat match with The Rock and Cena. He still gets mad. I'm sure he's still pissed off at that, but that's a real thing. So
he's mad somewhere right now. Yeah,
he's mad. So he's always mad, CM Punk. But like, that's a real thing. Like with wrestlers feeling, this guy comes in. Yes, he's a bigger box office name now than he was 6 years ago. But I've been here. I've been the WWE champion. I think, and they've said they've had some animosity. They've had words, and maybe it's been better and all that. But I could definitely see real, like, hey, you're gonna push this guy to the moon already? Like, he hasn't been here in 6 years. He's been in the other company. I've been here, and I'm not gonna get that spot. You're gonna make me lose three times? I could see animosity. I think we would feel a certain way if somebody came in and they haven't been in the company for a while, for years, and now they're getting your spot and getting more money or whatever. And in any type of life where you would be like, whoa, 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 I've been here. I've done what he's done. You know, like, what's up? So I could definitely see real animosity with those two as far as, you know, that.
Right on. So we'll go to match that I love, man. So, like, here's the thing. Rhea Ripley might be my favorite wrestler. I love her. Female wrestler. She might
be a wrestler. I don't even consider that. She's one of the best wrestlers on that roster.
She might be my favorite wrestler. And I know that there's like the whole thing, like if they're over, they don't need the belt. But like, you got to give Rhea a title, man. Like she has been holding it down. There's been a number of female wrestlers that have been dealing with injury lately, with, you know, Bex and with Charlotte and Asuka. Like a lot of them have been out. Sasha just walked away. Like, you have had Rhea just holding it down, and she is she is as over gets, man.
She's I think she's the best her and Bianca. I think she's a little under Bianca. I think Bianca is a
I would say
defender, but there she's those she's are the faces. Number one.
Yeah.
And if you want to flip flop and all that, I love Ripley. I would have her as my top, you know, female wrestler, but I think she's one of the best wrestlers in the company. Her look, as far as how she performs in the ring, she makes it look real and all that. And I love that aspect.
She sells too.
She has she knows how to do this. And I remember seeing her at the Mae Young Classic. And I was like, oh, she's going to be a star. There's certain people you just like. I remember even Roman. I'm like, oh, when he first came, I was like, oh, looked at him. I was like, yeah.
They come in and it's a rocket ship. Yeah.
They're going to put the rocket behind him and shoom, and it's just a matter of that he can steady in. I think Rhea's eventually going to be where Charlotte is.
The Judgment Day stuff, the mommy stuff, like there's a lot of gimmicky stuff.
She's gonna eventually get away from that and be her own star, and then she's gonna
I want. That's what I want. And her and Charlotte put on a 5-star match, dude. Like Charlotte did a great job selling. Charlotte did special. for as many people that give Charlotte a hard time for wanting to always be like in the mix, she will sell a match too. She will get someone over.
She's another one that makes it feel real. You want the fans to be invested and make you feel like, okay, we all know it's predetermined, but like you want to be like,
want to be surprised.
And like then she has that aura around the world, like, oh, she's gonna win, right? She's gonna win, right? So when Rhea Ripley puts the riptide on top rope and you're like, wait, she's gonna kick out. Oh, three. Oh, Rhea Ripley.
Or she hits the moonsault. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's just that real. And you can say what you want about Charlotte and all that, and whether she's always, every time she comes back, she wins the belt and all that. But, you know, they do it because they know whoever's chasing her can be a star. If they
most winning women champion in WWE
14.
History.
She got 14. She's going to break the record. She's going to be the one to break the most world championships in WWE. That's a fact. It's not going to be Cena. It's going to be her. She's going to be the one. And she's been tremendous. She's talented, but this match was fun. The build was kind of
It felt kind of rushed. Because we've seen it before. We've seen them fight before.
Yeah, you know? And it felt like, you know, I was like, okay, they didn't get to have the match they want, obviously, because COVID happened and they were wrestling in front of no one. So they kind of got robbed of that. The build felt well, but I was like, I know the match is going to be good. So that's the one thing you can fall.
Charlotte and Rhea is like hitting a stride that not a lot of superstars.
So I knew the match was going to be a banger, and that's what it was. And Rhea winning was the right move. That was probably one of the few times they made the right decision, WrestleMania.
I feel like every match was very predictable, and we'll get to night two.
Yeah, but and predictability isn't a bad thing, too. It's not. If it's done right, if it's done right, it could be fine. But it's just sometimes they get in their own way sometimes.
Exactly. So before we get into night two and the match that we want to talk about, this match ties in very closely to it. You had the Usos versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And now
this was great.
We talked about Seth Rollins and how he was impacted by Cody Rhodes coming back. I mean, Sami Zayn also heavily impacted by the Cody Rhodes return, because Sami is probably, if there's no Cody Rhodes, he's probably main eventing WrestleMania against Roman Reigns, right? With the Bloodline storyline.
It would with make Cody, most sense, yeah.
But with Cody Rhodes coming back, it's like, okay, we've had this whole Bloodline thing coming back. How can we have him be a part of tearing down the Bloodline? Let's team him up with his best friend that he's known for, what, you know, the better part of two decades.
Yeah.
And have them take on the Universal Tag Team, or the Undisputed Tag Team Champions. And that's what they did. And they beat the Usos, who have been, you know, the longest reigning tag team champions in WWE history.
Yeah, the storyline obviously has been tremendous with the whole Bloodline of Sammy and all that.
One of the best storylines that the WWE has had in quite some time.
And, you know, it's still going on, you know, but it was the storytelling and all that, how they incorporated Sammy and all that, and how it elevated him as a, you know, we know what he could do in the ring, but his mic skills went to another level and all that. Mm-hmm. And just like the believability and all that, and like just everything, the emotions that we had, especially, you know, he just, everything, we're on the edge, Royal Rumble and all that, you know, when he finally gets, and then we go to Toronto, you know, and you know, where he's in his hometown and all that. And like, he has home court advantage. He has home, he has home ring advantage and all that. And people are booing Roman Reigns like they haven't before. And just that. And then, you know, you're tying in Kevin Owens, and we've seen them. I remember when Sammy won the NXT title and they're hugging and all that. And he turns on him. And so there's always that, like, okay, Kevin, yeah, I can understand why Kevin's a little weary of him, but it's like, but what if Kevin says, all right, and then boom,
let's do it,
Kevin Owens, and then he turns on him on the same own, because it would make sense why Kevin would, because like, yo, bro, well, you've been running with these guys for months and all that, and now you want to suddenly come to me and all that, so I can get, but it was a tremendous match, great storytelling and all that. The hot tag was one of the best hot tags that I've ever seen in a tag team match, but it made tag team, there's never been a tag team match that's main evented for the championship. We've had tag team match, you know, I think WrestleMania 1 or whatever, main event, but main event for the tag team championships where we actually care.
Undisputed.
Because like
four usually, belts on the line.
It feels like a recent, like they'll just throw in a tag team match and it's just no, like it's always been a good match, but it's no sub. It's like, all right, that was cool. That was a good match. You know, but
it's like
no,
the four way like, showcase that they had.
Yeah, it's like a showcase. It'd be like a showcase, and it's like they'll throw four tag teams, put a ladder in it maybe, and that's it. But this one, like, you cared about it. So
yeah, a lot of gravity with that story.
It was great. Storytelling was great. The Usos are, I mean, they're so good.
They're showstoppers, man.
They really are just tremendous.
They're the ones.
They are the ones, and it was just great storytelling and all that. So I'm just happy with how the match came out and the right team won and all that. So night one was tremendous, man. It was really tremendous. Great matches and all that. And the main event was the correct main event too. That was the should have been a main event. And so yeah, that was a great night one. You know, that was, it's hard to top that. And I thought they could, but we'll get to that.
All right. So Chris, we're gonna take one more commercial break for the audience here. And when we come back, we'll close with night two. All right, but before we do that, here's a word from our sponsors. All right, thanks for hanging tight with us here on the Home and Away show here on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed, joined by guest Chris of the Off the Ball Network, where we have discussed the top five prospects of Taylor Hendricks, Jordan Hawkins, Chris Jackson Davis, Kobe Bufkin, and Gigi Jackson. We've also recapped night one of the two-night WrestleMania event, and we'll close with talking about night two. Now, Chris, we don't got to get too in-depth with this match because, let's be honest, it didn't last all that long. Brock Lesnar versus Omos. What did you think. We had the Battle of the Giants.
Exactly how I thought it would be. It was going to be a quick, you know, show of strength for Brock Lesnar. So exactly how I expected it to be. It was quick and all that. And, you know, quick payday for Brock. he got yeah. in, got out.
Money grab.
He was probably home by, halfway through the card, the match. So, exactly how I thought it would be. Quick, you know, just show his feet of strength and all that. And I don't think this has anything for Omos. I just think they just wanted a big guy. And they had nothing for Brock, so like, hey, can you just want to put him on your...
I don't get what happened with the Bobby Lashley not being involved with Brock Lesnar again. I don't get the
Omos. I thought that was going to be what they're going to do, and they kind of blew that off earlier than expected. So,
yeah.
So I thought that would have been better off doing that, but it is what it is.
Try to use Brock to get a guy over. I don't think it worked. And then we had the four-way women tag match. Now, I will say with the men's tag match, there were three legit teams, but... The Ricochet Braun team, as fun as it is, like, it doesn't feel like it's going to last. It's not like a thing that's along for the long haul.
No.
And I feel like
Braun's going to kill Ricochet one night. It always happens. Big guy, little guy, those tag teams, the big guy always turns on the little guy.
But I feel like the women's four-way tag exhibition is like way more choppy. It doesn't feel like there's no unity, you know what I mean, between... And I get why they did the women's tag team titles, because there are teams, right? Like we could talk about the Trish and Bex and Lita versus Damage Control. Like Damage Control being the women's tag team champion makes sense. You know, Sasha and Naomi made sense. There are these women duos that make sense as tag team champions. But, you know, they had the Ronda Rousey versus Shayna Baszler, which I guess is a legitimate tag team. But the other three, they kind of felt like, we're just going to assemble some people together.
Yeah, it was clunky. It was clunky and all that. Shotzi is, I don't know how she got a main event. She got to be on WrestleMania. She does a lot of things. She's very clumsy in the ring and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Ronda and Shayna, I mean, they're good, but Ronda wasn't 100%. So no. She didn't really do much.
They just kind of showed up at the end and won it. You know
what
I mean? Yeah,
it was just like, I know Raquel and...
I like Raquel and Liv.
Raquel and Liv could be a nice, solid tag team in that division and all that. They have the players. Just this match didn't feel – it fell out of place. It definitely fell out of place. And this
Natalya is, like, at the point where I'm like,
I've been over Natalya for – I can't stand that she has the riff in the beginning. I get mad at that. So whenever I hear that, I get mad because it's not Bret Hart.
I get it because, I mean, it's her family. I get the lineage, but it's just like –
yeah.
Yeah, we don't got to keep doing favors.
No. Yeah, it was a whatever. Like, I don't even remember most of the stuff that happened in that match. It just was like,
But let's talk about the women's match that I thought was fantastic, right? You got big time Becky Lynch, who is tag team champions with Lita. They have, you know, and Lita's friend Trish Stratus is going up against Damage Control, which I love the Damage Control storyline. I love Bex, and I love Trish and Lita. I mean, like, those are, you know, very formidable memories that we have as young men watching wrestling, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But they were also incredible in-ring talent and set the stage for the women that we have wrestling now. You know what I mean? So it's cool to see them out of the Attitude Era, where they were used in a very particular way. And now they get to showcase only their talent. You know what I mean?
Isn't that crazy how far we've come along? Where, like, how we, you know, how females
they were divas.
Perceived to us, whereas, like, you know, they're used as, you know, just models and stuff and all that. Now they actually
They're Playboy models.
They're Playboy and all that. Yeah, and like they're sexualized and all that. Now they're performers. They're superstars.
They're not divas anymore.
There's no more, like, divas and all that.
Big time Becky Lynch is the man. You know,
she's the man. She main evented the first female WrestleMania. You know, they had the first female WrestleMania main event. So, like, it's come a long way since we were teenagers and all that.
Girl. Yes. Absolutely. And then Damage Control, like, I love their whole vibe. I love I love Damage Control.
I'm not feeling it with Damage Control.
You don't think so? Why?
I don't feel it. I just feel like it's time. I don't think Bayley needs them. I think Bayley's a star.
Bayley doesn't need them. I think Bayley's like helping to get them over.
Or, you know, they but it hasn't worked.
I'm ready for them to turn on her. I think that that's going to be
That could be something, but then that means you would probably have Bayley as a babyface, and then it's like, okay, which Bayley
could have. We haven't had babyface Bayley.
What babyface Bayley do you get? Are you going to get back the inflatable flume? You know,
I don't think that you do that.
I don't think you do that. So, like, what does Bayley as a babyface look like without?
We don't know, and I think that that's
it's intriguing, but
the appeal. I think that's the appeal of it. It's like, okay, like we've had like the bad girl Bayley for a long time, and she's always like stabbing people in the back to get her way. And I think it would be cool just to see a different side of her without all the colors and stuff, you know?
No, yeah, I think something needs to change because I just damage control. I feel like they've they're it's time. It's time to make a change.
There. I'm with you. So let's talk about Edge.
I'm on the phone.
I'm sorry.
it's all good. So we'll go through these next few little bit. Edge versus Finn Balor. What did you think of that match?
Edge versus Finn. I mean, it got that Finn Balor shot he took. That was gnarly. That was a gnarly hit. Yeah, that was a gnarly hit to
that. That wasn't fake.
That was not fake. And I know people were getting mad because it's like it's a Hell in a Cell. Why are you stopping? It's like, yeah, the guy's head's cracked open, guys.
Yeah.
And he showed it after, like his head was split open. Like that was a legit shot and all that. So yeah, you gotta.
And he came up and did the show.
Yeah, he finished the match and all that. So like, you gotta take care of your first. This isn't the 90s and all that. We can't keep thinking, go back to that age and think that's how wrestling is, because Mick Foley would probably be like, I wish you did stop the match when I got thrown off the cage, all through the cage and all that. So like, but it was solid and all that, you know.
What do you think about Edge lately, man? Like, is it done? You think it's time?
Yeah, I think he's getting close to the end and all that. So I'm happy he came back. I'm happy he's back and he's able to have this run because he got robbed of it for a lot of years. So it could have been better and all that But I thought Finn should have won and all that went over. But you know, it was what it was. It was solid.
All right. So speaking of solid, Belair versus Asuka. What do you think? What did you think of the match? I wanted Asuka to win. I'm not gonna lie.
How they booked Asuka's hasn't been great. So I kind of, and the way Bianca is portrayed, she's kind of like the female, like Brock Lesnar. Like she's just unstoppable right now. And she needs a character change. I feel like eventually she needs to go heel and just be that dom, like be the Roman Reigns. Like she hasn't lost she hasn't lost in a year.
Who's the AEW women's champ? You know what I'm talking about?
The AEW, that's a good question. I know the TNT.
Is it Jade
Cargill is the TNT. I don't even know the AEW women's champ. Oh, it's I forgot her name, but I know the TNT champion
The TNT Jade Cargill.
Jade Cargill is the TNT champion. Yeah,
it would be cool to see something like that. Jade Cargill.
Jade feels more like a WWE wrestler.
That's what I'm saying.
AEW wrestler.
I don't know how WWE isn't like, here's a lot of money.
Well, I think if whenever her free agency is, I think she's someone that they're going to throw money at her because they feel, I feel like she's a star in AEW, but I feel like if she gets to WWE, they're going to, the way you see how they
and MJF are like, they're holding that down.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're definitely holding that down and all that. But
Bianca is kind of like in that, like how we were just talking with, Bayley, you know what I mean? Where it's like a lot of dancing, a lot of happy, very talented.
That's what I'm saying. She needs more of an edge because I think she's going to eventually, if she keeps winning, people are going to get tired of it. And I think people are getting a little tired of it and you kind of need that switch.
I also love Asuka. Asuka is like one of my favorite wrestlers.
She's one of the best ever. And all that. It just feels like, it always feels like with WWE when they have, you know, Japanese wrestlers, they just can never give them the chance to be the guy or the girl. And you see that with Shinsuke. Like, I thought Shinsuke should have been the WWE champion when he fought Jinder Mahal. Yeah. And they had Jinder Mahal win and all that, you know. But they're still trying to figure out. They've been better with how they book their.
She's been a champion before.
She's been a champion, but she's 0-5 in WrestleMania. I believe. She's never won a WrestleMania match, which is kind of weird.
But she's also had one of the longest undefeated streaks in WWE. So, yeah, it is weird that you would see that. But I thought it was a decent match. I just feel like there's a lot of clumsy moments, though, you know what I mean, between the two of them. I don't know if it's just like a chemistry thing between them, but it felt like they fumbled a lot in the match.
It's two different styles and all that. You got one who's an athletic person, one is more of like a strong style type of wrestler. So those sometimes those two don't always – those type of arcs don't really blend, but it was all right. It was all right.
It was a fun match. So two more matches to discuss. Let's talk about the triple threat because I felt like that stole the show on night one. You had Gunther, who is also on an incredible hot streak right now. And then you got the Banger Brothers with Sheamus and Drew McIntyre. That was just the most fun I ever saw, dude. Just beating the crap out of each other.
This was exactly how I wanted it to be. It was exactly how it came out. And this was when you have three guys like this who are just legit ass kickers and just know how to beat each other up. You're like, I know everybody likes high flying and all, they want the technical marvel, but sometimes you just want guys to just beat the crap out of each other. Yeah. Exactly what you see the guy's chest and all that.
It
and
was
you got
a
three,
long match too for a brawl.
They had it, and you see some athleticism, especially with Drew. Drew is a freak athlete. Like the fact that he can do what he did, jumping out of the ring, doing
the kip-ups and
the kick-ups he can do. I think he's going to eventually get back in the world title scene. But I think all three guys are
the top of the card is so deep now. Though,
yeah, man. I think Gunther is eventually he's going to be the champ. The next heel champion.
Yeah.
He's going to be the next. You have to put him as a champion.
He's so young and so good. They rebranded him from Walter to Gunther. Like,
and people were so mad at the name. Like, oh, he's changing his name. It's like, you'll get over it. You'll get over the name change. Because guess what? Because people got mad. It's crazy. People got mad that he changed his name and he got healthier. Yeah. Like, he got more in shape. And people were like, oh, I liked him when he was fat. It was like, well, he doesn't like when he's fat. And the company said, yeah, you got those little LBs. And guess what? You know, you listen and guess
he's
what?
One of the best decision.
The best decision he did was do that. And he's in great shape and he can go 40 minutes. He can do an hour long, you know? Mm-hmm.
He went the distance at Royal Rumble, you know?
Yeah. And he was getting booked solid even when Vince was taking over. Now with Triple H, booked him tremendous in NXT UK and NXT. He's going to be the next heel champion. He is. He has the look. He has the presence. He has the real. Like, it feels like you're literally getting your ass beat by him. Like, he makes it feel real. All three of those guys make it feel like some of the punches they were laying on. I was like, oh, that was a little stiff. That was a little stiff and all that. Like, they make it feel real. Sheamus has always been that way. Drew's been that way. And Gunther.
Is Sheamus ever going to win the Intercontinental Championship?
I think eventually. I think how I would do it is SummerSlam.
I thought that was going to be it. I thought there were a couple moments where it was like Sheamus is still
over
in this match.
I actually said that Gunther's going to win because it's his first WrestleMania. I don't want him losing his first WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I want him to be one. I want him to get the first.
Yeah,
so that's the precedent. Like, if you want to do a streak, even if you want to do something like that, like little thing like that, like Sheamus can get his win. Let him get my WrestleMania. But this should be Gunther's win for sure. He definitely earned that win and all that. Those guys have had their wins.
It's going to be hard to see him lose, though, after a match like that. It's like, who beats him?
You know what's crazy? I had my little own thoughts. Like, just him drop the belt. Like, hey, I'm going on to bigger and better things. I'm going after the world championship. So whoever the next babyface champion, whoever finally beats Roman, if that happens –
belt versus belt, maybe, like he in theory?
Something like that. Or, you know, he loses in a triple threat match where he doesn't get pinned. You know, I think that's the way you have. I don't think you can have him lose, you know, just straight up, you know, like a clean finish and all that. I think it's got to be a triple threat match where he doesn't get pinned or he just says, I'm going after the, especially if they split the belts. Now, if you split the belts, it's easier to do. So if you have eventually, if you do have,
he and Rollins sports, might be good too, like an Intercontinental Championship.
With those, and if you know on SmackDown, he got two guys he just fought yesterday.
Yeah,
he can go have world title feuds with Sheamus and McIntyre and all that. So he's got an abundance of opponents, but I think he's the next heel champion. especially if they split it, he'll definitely win championship by this year. So depending on what they do with the belts, if they're going to split it or they're going to keep having whoever wins, if whoever wins next, keep both belts, which I don't think they're going to do. I think they're eventually going to split it and all that. But he's the next heel champion. He's that dude. He's that good.
Very nice. All right, so last one, man. This is where we get disappointed. Roman Reigns has headlined and defended successfully his WWE Undisputed Heavyweight Championships for three straight Manias. All roads lead to Roman Reigns. Cody Rhodes had the build up to win. Like, we're hearing stories about like how if Roman were to lose, he would take a break from the company. I don't know if that played a part in ultimately how the booking happened, but despite a number of moments, like Cody Rhodes had probably like the most like heartfelt entrance into a match.
Oh yeah. He grabbed the baby. I was like,
and
oh.
the baby
that was also a sign too. Like, wait, why is he doing this? And now somebody just mentioned this and it was a good point. They're like, you know, then they said, this is why I felt like Roman was going to win. He's like, why are they doing him holding the baby before and not after? That's something you would save. They're like, something.
Is that like because we know how WWE is. Cody Rhodes recently is an AEW guy. And there have been like every once in a while, like AEW will have a week where they like have an overnight against WWE. It doesn't happen as much. Nowhere. It's not the WCW days.
Yeah,
right?
No, definitely not.
But every once in a while, like MJF will do something and they'll be like, oh, this is why, you know, not everybody likes WWE. Do you think there's a little bit of that to where it's like the WWE dude who has been undefeated for like forever is not about to lose in his first time, not his first match against an AEW product?
We've seen it before, so that's not a crazy speculation that maybe they're just like, hey, not right now. But if it should have been though, because it just made sense though. Like the story,
he had the whole Dusty thing going on.
You have the Dusty thing and all that, and like this is the one title that's a loop. That's why he left AEW, because he felt like, I'm missing something. I want to be the WWE champion. That's always been my goal. Yes, I left there. I became a bigger star, and I put myself in a position to maybe one day be in this position.
Mm-hmm.
The story was there. Even if you weren't a big Cody Rhodes guy and you don't think he can be a face of a company, the story was there. The story should have been. To me, WrestleMania is
the culmination of a story,
and then you rebuild the stories again at summer. I always felt like that's how
how do you, like, everything was built up for WrestleMania. How are we supposed to continue to invest in Cody Rhodes's determination to be a champion after all the buildup that we had, the performance that he had? Like, it just felt like it was his time.
It was. I thought it was his time, and it should have been.
He had the Usos intervene, and then Sammy and KO came in and even the odds. So you thought that won the match.
Yeah, and then you kick out Solo in the beginning, and I was like, oh, they're going to, because Roman's always cheated. And he's always cheated. So I was like, oh, they kicked out Solo.
Any means necessary. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. And then when Cody has him, you know, has him for the finisher, I was like, oh my God, it's going to happen. He hit him once. He hit him twice. I was like, oh, it's gonna. And then Paul Heyman gets up. I was like, when Paul Heyman got, I was like, what's gonna happen? And then
that doesn't always happen. And then Solo comes in with the hoodie and hits him with the spike.
And then I'm still waiting, because even you're like, all right, the finish happens and all that. And you're like, okay, something else, like, someone's gonna come out and be like, no, this isn't how it's gonna end.
Mm-hmm.
We saw what you did. You cheated. Solo, you're out. Get out of the building.
Yeah.
Out, completely out. And restart the match. And then
is there going to be a fourth person that comes in? I've been wondering that for weeks now, like where we've had the Bloodline versus against, you know, it's Cody Rhodes and then Sammy and KO. But the Bloodline has had the Solo Sokoa.
There's only one guy.
There's only one guy
that can help Cody to this level, and it's The Rock. There's no one else.
I thought you were gonna say Orton, maybe.
I don't. Orton
has the family lineage,
but
Orton's
he also you know, destroyed legacy at the end and Cody and all that. So like, but The Rock being like, hey, you're calling yourself against the tribal chief?
Against his own family?
Because he can feel like, well, yeah, you.
Well, who does The Rock? Is The Rock facing Solo though? So like who?
No,
who
it doesn't even have to be The Rock. He has Cody's back because okay. He's like, he tells Roman like, hey, well, yeah, you've been champion, but you've also cheated along that way. You've had your help from all these other guys. So are you truly the head of the table and all that? Mm. Why don't you do this when it's just you two, a mano a mano? You know, something to that extent. It has to be now that they put themselves in this position, they have to do something that's bigger because what's bigger than WrestleMania? There's nothing bigger.
So everybody just like hang tight because we're recording this on Monday, like while Raw is going on. So like they're very well, there might be the answer happening. Like
they did have something happen in the beginning, but I didn't get to listen to it. So I'll listen to it back, but something happened. I don't know what happened. And someone else came out. I don't want to give spoilers out. But since when is this group getting dropped?
Oh, it's dropping tomorrow morning. So this airs on Tuesday morning.
Yeah. So like Brock came out. So I don't know what happened there. So I'm going to have to rewind and see what happened, but maybe he gets he needs someone of significance, Cody, to have his back because you cheated to win. And that's, and I don't know if that's the way they're going to go because if I'm Cody, I'm like, storyline wise, like, bro, I beat you.
Yeah.
I had you beat. I'm the closest to have beaten you and you needed the bloodline to help you out.
Every trick you could pull, you pulled it.
Yes. So, they should have just ended, but I'm going to go with this. The storyline's been good. I'm going to go with this, even though it should have culminated at WrestleMania. Give Cody his moment because at the end of the day, you got to let the fans go home happy. Because I know there's a lot of fans that, like, they were pissed. They were pissed.
Because WrestleMania was pretty much on script up until that match. I feel like most people would have.
It was a great WrestleMania, and it still was. That was a great main event. That was still it, but the finish. And guess what? It's like anything else. Everything could be great for three quarters. It could be the best thing, but it's how it ends. Everything, that's how it ends. It's like the main event of a boxing match. The whole card could be great, but if the main event, UFC and anything, the main event stinks. You're like, yeah, it was good, but damn, that main event.
What's Eric Bischoff say about controversy?
Creates cash. So especially with now you have a new ownership. They just sold the company. You know, maybe they're like, hey, let's keep this thing going. Roman as the guy, get him to 1,000 days. I know maybe that's a big thing because that's a big milestone.
No, that's only about a month and a half away.
And that's not too far away where you can still keep Cody hot. Because I think Cody's the guy to beat Roman. I still think.
I think he's got to have a little bit he's got like a nice guy streak. I want to see him get. I want to see him get mean now. I want to see.
Maybe
him get
this
mean.
Comes out. Maybe that aggression because he's always coming out. He's smiling. He's telling the fans how much he misses. Now it's like okay. Now you got a month to get mean. A mean streak, and now that we had that, maybe the fans are still. I think the fans will still be on your side, and whether it's at Backlash in Puerto Rico or SummerSlam, then we do it. So I'm still riding with it. It's disappointing that he didn't, but I'm gonna keep going it because it's still been a good storyline.
I'm gonna watch anyway. That's what
I'm gonna watch regardless. I've been saying I'm not gonna watch, and I've had my moments where I won't watch for like a few months, but I'm always I'm always looking at the corner like I'm not watching.
Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
Yeah, because Steven, I didn't watch wrestling from 2003 to 2010. Legit 7 years.
I went
7 years without watching because, you know, also you go through that stretch. We all go through that teenage stretch where like wrestling gets boring, corny and all that. And then like, it's crazy. The older you get, you're like, oh no, why did I stop watching? This is
great storytelling.
It feels like a lot of people go through that phase of wrestling where like they have their teenage, because it's like, oh, everything's corny when you're a teenager. Your parents are corny when you're a teenager. But then you get older, you're like, oh, I need you. I need you more than I thought. You know, but it's like wrestling. It's the same thing with wrestling. And it's like, it's crazy how much that does it. But like, overall, WrestleMania was great.
I had a good time.
The ending wasn't so hot and all that, but
not a Hollywood ending.
Not a Hollywood ending, but or is it? And Hollywood, you know, sometimes not even Hollywood movies ends the way you want to. But we'll see. This is a continuing story and all that. And even Triple H said, hey, that doesn't mean it's over. It's just we're on to the next chapter. It may not be the best chapter, but now it gets you maybe in a way, maybe need to let it marinate a little bit, a couple days not watching it and be like, okay.
Let the dust
settle. Try to figure out, okay, what? Okay, maybe, not what I would have done, but maybe they go if they go this way and make. That's what we got to see. If in 2 months and we come back here and nothing happened, then we'd be like, oh, they made a terrible decision. But maybe we come back to them and like, oh, wow, I didn't think they would go this way. But actually what they did was smart. We got to let it marinate. Wrestling, you have to let, it's like a soap opera, right? We get mad at it, but it's like, let's let it marinate. Let's let it sit for a little bit. Let's see how it feels in a month or two and see if it makes sense. Because even with something like the Bloodline stuff, some of it didn't make sense, but then you let it rock and you're like, the Sami Zayn didn't. I'm like, that's stupid. Why would they let him in?
And now he's playing.
Now he's main eventing night one of WrestleMania, and he's the biggest baby face and maybe the biggest baby face in the company. So sometimes maybe you let it ride. You know, it's upsetting because I think you wanted Cody to get that moment because he's been fighting it, but also doesn't mean it over. It's not over. You can get that moment, you know, at the Garden. They have events coming at the Garden because he's always said, I want to win the title at the Garden. That's where his dad almost won it, you know, and they get, you know, so maybe he gets at the Garden and all that and all that. And it felt like WrestleMania was the moment, but we'll see what happens, man.
Like you said, man, we'll see what happens. But Chris, dude, it's this was a great time, dude. This was everything.
Always a pleasure, bro. More, always man. Fun. Always fun chopping up. When you told me you wanted me on, it was an honor. So I'm happy to come on and chop it up with you, talking a little, you know, NBA draft, talk wrestling. Doesn't get any better.
Well, you know, never forget where you come from, right? Like we've been wrestling fans, along, we've been basketball fans. Yeah,
it's come a long way. Think about that. I always think about that. Sometimes you gotta pinch yourself. Be like, hey, we've done some cool things, you know, along this journey, this podcast journey. Like it's, you know, people, everybody wants instant gratification, but you put in the work and all that. And, you know, sometimes good things happen where you're able to do some cool things. So, you know, it's been fun to see how far we've come along.
Absolutely, bro. And hey, it's still happening.
Still happening. There's still a lot more things to accomplish and all that. Yeah. No, it's like wrestling. You keep going and all that, but yeah, man, it was a pleasure, bro. I really had
fun. Yeah, this episode's been a shoot, dude. So let's let the folks know where they can find you and your work, man, and anything that you got going on.
Yeah, man, you can follow me at Off the Ball Pod. That's where I'm most active and all that. You know, talking all things basketball, whatever comes to my mind. I'm just with basketball related. You know, follow me there. Follow Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Off the Ball Network is where I have post a lot of shows and all the great content. Follow Off the Ball Network. OTB_network on Twitter, Facebook page. Go like the Facebook page. Give us a sub on YouTube. Trying to get to 400 subs on there. And offtheballnetwork.com. Got a lot of good things coming up. Me and my guy Nick are working on a Chris Webber piece that we're gonna have coming out soon. Gonna post some my draft stuff now that you know, unfortunately, the last, you know, coming to the end of college basketball season. You know, could post more draft stuff and all that, but yeah, follow me there, man. Like I said, appreciate you having me, bro.
Yeah, dude, it's been a long time coming. I'm glad that we were able to do this. But for anyone who wants to follow me, they can do so on Twitter at Stephen G Hoops. Just had a piece released not too long ago about Jordan Miller and how Jordan I project. Miller. Yeah,
Jordan Miller.
He's a dude.
I love your guys' stuff. I literally get a cup of coffee, go in my emails and read it, because you learn something new every day. So that's one thing you guys really do is, and you make it enjoyable. It's not just like, well, this guy just like strict, it's you add a little flavor to it. That's what's good. People want to know about these players, but you want to get a little spice to make it entertaining, not just like broad, like, oh, he's good in pick and roll. And you get a little spice to it. That's what I think you guys stand out so much.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And you know, like I said, that Jordan Miller piece at NoCeilingsNBA.com. Subscribe, like Chris is saying, man, like you can get content delivered to your email every day throughout the week for absolutely free. Not a lot of places that can say that, you know. And then please, while you're listening to the podcast, like, share, subscribe, rate, and review, all that fun stuff. It goes a long way. And just be sure to tune in tomorrow for Nick and the Deep Dives Pod. I hear he's got a great episode lined up with a very special guest, so be sure to listen to that. And then, you know, we got the draft act on Thursday, and then the No Ceilings NBA flagship podcast on Friday is going to drop. So, and we're going to have great content throughout the rest of the season. So Be sure to follow everything that we're going on. Follow us on Twitter at NoCeilingsNBA. Go to NoCeilingsTV on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel there. We've got a lot of finals videos being posted out that way as well. So, Chris, I don't think that I have anything else to talk about. So why don't we go ahead and wrap this up, man? Just thank you so much for coming on, man. And thank you for all the beautiful people who are watching and listening. And we'll catch up with y'all next time. Much love, y'all.